CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here's your host, Rita Farkas.
Good evening. Alongside me this evening is Jeff Sargent. Coming up on the program, Vancouver is rated as having the highest number of break-ins in North America.
Bad drivers in British Columbia can expect a letter in the mail from ICBC.
And in arts, Katie Fitzpatrick takes a look at what's happening around this city this week and gives us a film review.
We'll have all this, plus national and international news, as well as your weekly weekend weather forecast coming up in the next hour right here on News 101.
And here at UBC, a researcher has shed light on one of the mysteries of fin whales. Jeremy A. Goldenboggen wondered why fin whales, one of the largest mammals on Earth, take such short, strange dives underwater. The bigger the marine mammal in Goldenboggen's reasoning, the longer it should be able to dive for food because it has more muscle tissue in which it can store oxygen. Other species follow this pattern, but fin whales and other large whales do not. To solve this mystery, Goldenboggen and his colleagues, Robert Shadwick of UBC and Nick Pyenson, biologist at the University of California, Berkeley, created the first detailed biomechanical model of a feeding fin whale. Using monitors which logged the speed and depth of the whales, Goldenboggen realized that the fin whales were taking short dives in order to feed. A fin whale will dive down to about 600 feet underwater, where large swarms of krill can be found. The whale will then gather speed using powerful kicks of its tail, open its mouth, and grind to a halt. The underside of the fin whale's mouth is made up of a unique set of pleats that can stretch to four times their normal size. By continuing to beat its tail, the whale forces more water in, causing its mouth to expand like a parachute and flood with 18,000 gallons of water in about 3 seconds. The water in the whale's mouth now weighs more than the whale itself. And just as race car drivers use parachutes to slow them down, the whale's inflated mouth brings it to a dead stop. Then the fin whale closes its mouth, the pleats on the underside of its mouth closes, and the water is pushed out of the whale through thin plates called baleen. The krill from the water are caught in the baleen. A single gulp will catch about 20 pounds of krill, but the fin whale can take a gulp every 30 seconds. After about 4 hours, a fin whale can catch about a ton of krill, providing enough food for the day. Up next for Mr. Goldenboggen and his colleagues is the mystery of why the fin whale is so large, testing the hypothesis that this method of gulp feeding led to a large size of these mammals. Now, with local news, here are News 101 reporters Leanne Yu and Mary Bernard.
A report released yesterday ranks Vancouver as having the highest number of break-ins in North America. This new title follows steep records for break-ins in the city. Last year, the city recorded over 1,100 break-ins per 100,000 residents. Compare those figures to other cities like New York's 300, and you can see we've got some problems. The number showed up in an annual report by the BC Progress Boards, which also showed that Vancouver has the second highest violent and property crime rate in all major North American cities. In addition to violent crimes and break-ins was the amount of British Columbians who live below the low-income threshold. The report indicated that 17.5% of the province sits in this category, which is the second highest number in all of Canada. Worse still, the report notes that these numbers have only worsened through the last 10 years.
Looking for a quick escape from all the rain, the hustle, and the bustle? There is a great free event in Vancouver that's sure to brighten your spirits. If you need to replenish your energy and escape the cold weather and the busy mall, take a trip to the top of Queen Elizabeth Park tonight before 9 p.m. Today is the Blodell Floral Conservatory's annual free day. The tropical paradise has tons of plants from lots of warm places and is decorated for the holidays with lights and poinsettias. Have a friendly conversation with one of the Conservatory's talking birds, or just relax in the warmth and enjoy the atmosphere. Admission today is completely free until the doors close at 9 o'clock tonight.
There's some disagreement in the Vancouver City Council over a tax rate increase. Mayor Sam Sullivan and the MPA party have targeted a 3% in property tax increase to pay for the increasing costs of city services. A tax increase is needed because of a provincial fiscal imbalance, Sullivan claims, and that to fix it, the province should give some of its multi-billion surplus back to the cities. However, Vision Vancouver Councilman Raymond Louis says that 3% isn't an accurate figure. He claims that Mayor Sullivan isn't counting all the costs the city will have to cover, including the cost of more police officers. He says that 3% is just the number Sullivan wants to use for his election next fall. Louis claims that the real property tax increase is going to have to be around 6%.
And BC drivers with a bad driving record should include improving their driving skills in their New Year's resolution this year. Bad drivers in Vancouver will be receiving a letter soon from ICBC. There are 140,000 British Columbians on ICBC's list of high-risk drivers. The notice to bad drivers, effective January 1st, is if their driving behavior doesn't change, their premiums will be getting significantly higher. Drivers on the high risk list include those who have already received tickets for speeding, failure to stop, impaired driving, and street racing.
British Columbia has the lowest rental vacancy rates in all of Canada, with the rate in Vancouver even lower still. The rental vacancy rate in BC is 1%, and in Vancouver, 0.7%. Senior market analyst Robin Adamack says that our low rental vacancy rates are due to the hot Vancouver housing market. In the past 5 years, developers have focused on building condos, and few rental units have been built. At the same time, about 30,000 people move into the region each year, and that makes a demand for a lot more housing. Adding to this is the strong economy, which is creating new jobs, particularly for the young age group. All right, we're now going to take a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
Interested in NGOs or the nonprofit sector? Want to teach in another country? How about a position in the commerce or engineering sector? Do you want to travel abroad and have a life-changing experience? Isaac UBC offers different internships for all kinds of specialties. We are looking for students interested in fields such as the HIV/AIDS pandemic, community empowerment, business administration, education, environment, and sustainability, and much more. If you're interested in working abroad or helping out on campus, please contact ubc.aiesec@gmail.com. That's ubc.aiesec@gmail.com. It's up to you.
Want to know what's going on around town? LiveMusicVancouver.com is the Lower Mainland's comprehensive source for live music listings. We've got more than 350 shows listed at any time, and our listings are updated continuously by hundreds of the very people who put on the shows you love. Artist information and MP3s are accessible right from the listings, as are maps and calendars for virtually every venue in the city. All this and tons more totally free at LiveMusicVancouver.com.
Are you a UBC student taking first-year economics, math, chemistry, or physics?
That stuff is hard.
Are you feeling like you need some tutoring? That's okay, because the AMS offers free and appointment tutoring for students in these subjects.
Whoa! How does it work?
It's on a first-come, first-served basis, and there's no need to sign up. Just show up with your books and your questions.
Whoa! When does it happen?
Monday to Thursday from 3 to 7 at the Sub Pacific Spirit Cafeteria, located beside the Starbucks.
Whoa! A+, here I come.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:17. Now, with a look at other BC news, we're joined in studio by News 101 reporters Carrie Baptist and Leanne Yu.
Local shipbuilders want compensation for the loss of business after the latest addition to BC's ferry fleet arrived from Germany today. The first of three new ferries, the Coastal Renaissance, arrived in the province yesterday. Now the federal NDP and representatives of the local shipbuilding industry are calling for the $82 million in import duties, which was collected by Ottawa, to be turned over to shipbuilders in this province. NDP MP Peter Julian said that 5,000 jobs were lost in British Columbia because of the provincial government's short-sighted decision to invest in the German shipbuilding industry. Julian maintains that the only way to ensure that BC's shipbuilding industry is not gutted would be to pass on all import duties to local manufacturers. The president of the BC Shipyard General Workers Federation, George McPherson, was even more scathing in his critique, saying BC workers could have built the ferries on budget and on time, but BC Ferries chose to create 5,000 jobs in Europe instead.
268 local debit card accounts have been stolen from in Greater Victoria this past week, and Eastern European gangs are believed to be the culprits. Sergeant John Prince says there's a large group of the organized gang in the Lower Mainland. The group is known to make trips across Canada committing debit card crimes. Typically, a group of thieves will enter a store, distract the clerk, then switch the PIN pad. Debit users are told to protect themselves by checking their bank accounts daily if possible. Check the PIN pad for raised screws, the absence of a serial number, or if the machine looks like it doesn't fit before you give your debit card. Victims of debit fraud can get their money back if it is stolen. Last year, a total of $95 million was stolen in debit card scams.
A 5-kilometer-long ice jam has raised water levels in the Nechako River, enough to flood parts of Prince George, B.C. 13 homes have been evacuated, while 50 additional homes were placed on evacuation alert last night. Flood technician Lyle Larson says the worst could be over. He adds, as the temperatures continue to rise, the ice pack will soften and the river will continue to carve its way through the ice. Some residents are complaining the lack of communication from city officials is making matters worse. But city spokesman Don Schaefer says city staff have been going door to door to speak with people and hand them notices. City staff will continue to do this while working with the province to look at new ways to improve the flow of information.
We're going to take another break now, but when we come back, we'll update you on national and international news. Stay with us. News 101 will continue right after this.
Hi, I'm Kirsty.
And I'm Sheila.
And we're both single moms. We started SPOC UBC, Single Parenting on Campus, an AMS club, with the hope of drawing attention to the additional challenges single parenting students face on our campus. We want to create a space for single parenting students to find resources and support.
Our first meeting will be held on Tuesday, November 6th from 11 to 12:30 at the Women and Gender Studies WAGS building right next to Brock Hall. We welcome all single parenting students and, of course, allies. And please remember that your children are always welcome.
Please help us spread the word by informing any single parenting students that you know about our group. We're also open to receiving anecdotes or stories from single parent students regarding their time spent at UBC.
Feel free to drop by our meeting on November 6th or send us an email at spoc.ubc@gmail.com. We really look forward to hearing or seeing you.
Ho, 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 Vancouver. It's time for the Mint Records, just in time for Christmas party. On December 14th and December 15th, the Mint Records, just in time for Christmas party, will take place at the Railway Club with an unprecedented number of bands performing. Get there early because the first 75 paid entrants each night will receive a gift. Plus, there will be no advance tickets.
Friday to December the 14th features the Pack AD, Bella, Immaculate Machine, Young and Sexy, and the Buttless Chaps. Whereas Saturday, December the 15th, you'll be seeing Van Cougar, the Choir Practice, the Awkward Stage, Carolyn Mark, and the Ramblin' Ambassadors. And both nights feature CITR's own DJ Bryston spinning tunes in the back lounge.
The Mint Records just in time for Christmas party. Friday, December 14th and Saturday, December 15th at the Railway Club. 579 Dunsmuir Street. First come, first serve.
Opening band Friday is Kellarissa, and on Saturday it's Hot Panda.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
And the news continues on CITR. Now with a look at national news, we're joined in studio by Carrie Baptist and Marie Bernard.
A new report from the Health Council of Canada is calling on government action to ensure that Canadians stay healthy. The council says governments must help mitigate the growing epidemic of heart disease, diabetes, cancer, and other chronic conditions, and work to better support patients with these conditions. Through surveys, the council has found that although Canadians are relatively healthy when compared to other countries, we do rank last when looking at timely access to high-quality primary health care. The council notes that over 9 million Canadians have chronic health conditions. Vice Chair of the Council, Dr. Ian Bomer, says because of this, governments need to use their full range of influence to ensure the health of citizens. He adds that Canadians should demand better health care from our health system. Among a list of recommendations to governments and to Canadians, the report notes that governments need to support the many risk factors to chronic complications such as inactivity, poor eating habits, and smoking. In addition, the council mentions the advantage of better primary care resulting in less of a dependence on hospital visits. The council says governments are spending billions to care for the sick rather than investing in proven strategies to avoid health complications. With more national...
A federal task force is calling for major changes to the structure, independence, and oversight of the RCMP. The task force, headed by Toronto lawyer David Brown, says the Mounties are mired in bureaucracy and must have more authority to manage their own staff and budget. Brown calls the problems deep and fundamental and says the RCMP should be made a separate entity in the federal realm, meaning it would not have to repeatedly go cap in hand to the Treasury Board for money once Parliament approves its overall budget. The task force also recommends a new civilian board of management to oversee the organization and administration of the force, and a revamped complaints watchdog with more robust powers. Task force members met with more than 2,000 frontline officers, seeing fierce pride and dedication to the people they serve. But Brown says the task force also witnessed despair, disillusionment, and anger with an organization that is failing them.
And in international news, a deal was reached after days of meetings and negotiations at the Bali Climate Change Conference this week. Talks with environmental representatives from 180 countries did hit a snag with U.S. resistance to incorporate certain targets. Marcelo Furtado from Greenpeace Brazil talks with FSRN about this issue.
A deadline came and went at the UN's climate change conference in Bali to create a framework for negotiations for a new document to replace the Kyoto Protocol, which expires in 2012. But with a day-long extension, a deal was finally reached. Talks with environmental representatives from 180 countries hit a snag. At issue was U.S. resistance to incorporate certain targets. Marcelo Furtado is the director of Greenpeace Brazil.
Taking off the hook the nations that are most responsible for the problem. And by doing that, what the U.S. shows is total disregard to the status of the world, total disregard to science, total disregard to the lives of the people that are already suffering the consequences of climate change. We know the U.S. is being lethal.
Environmental groups and developing nations backed a European Union proposal seeking to make industrialized nations cut emissions 25% to 40% of their 1990 levels by 2020. But the United States opposed those guidelines. Masako Konishi works with the World Wildlife Fund Japan. She says that Japan needs to move forward on its own position, independent of the U.S.
United States put a very evil proposal last night, which is only based on voluntary bottom-up approach. And Japan always made it so clear that they are always waiting for the United States on board, and they didn't clearly state it what they are aiming for. But when we ask the Japanese government what their really position is, then they clearly stated on the second day that they are aiming for building a Kyoto Protocol and not scrapping Kyoto Protocol. But at this stage, if Japan still supports the United States, then it's already a crime. So Japan certainly wouldn't want to be aligned to the United States, who is a Kyoto killer.
Despite the impasse, many remained hopeful that a framework to move forward on climate change could still occur. Former Vice President Al Gore admitted that the U.S. is principally responsible for obstructing progress at the conference, but added that other nations can take steps to move forward from Bali with hope.
You can feel anger and frustration and direct it at the United States of America, or you can make a second choice. You can decide to move forward and do all of the difficult work that needs to be done and save a large, open, blank space in your document and put a footnote by it. And when you look at the footnote, this document is incomplete. But we are going to move forward anyway, that blank will be filled in.
The next meeting for the UN climate change treaty process is set to take place in Honolulu next month.
And thank you very much to Free Speech Radio News for making that piece available for rebroadcast. Another piece from FSRN now, and there is an additional climate change conference going on in Germany. A group known as Greenwatch is discussing how so-called agrofuels such as soy or sugarcane may or may not have a positive effect on climate change.
As the UN Climate Change Conference was held in Bali this week, another conference got underway in Berlin. The German NGO Germanwatch gathered people together from Europe, the United States, Africa, Latin America, and Asia to talk about biofuels and agrofuels. Agrofuels like soy, corn, and sugarcane are being promoted by the global north as the answer to our dependence on oil. And car manufacturers like Volkswagen and major agro-business companies like Monsanto are among the companies investing in this new fuel source. But scientists are raising concerns about whether agrofuels will actually help to mitigate or, in fact, accelerate climate change, as forests are being cleared to make way for these new fuel crops. Cinnamon Napard has more from Berlin.
To meet ambitious renewable fuel targets, Eric Holt-Gimenez, director of Food First Institute for Food and Development Policy, says Europe would have to convert 70% of its farming land into fuel, and the United States would have to process its entire corn and soy harvest for use as ethanol and biodiesel. So the North is investing in nations in the global south, like Brazil, Africa and Indonesia, to meet their fuel demands. But this is not without cost. Abdullah Ramadan Mkindi works for the NGO EnviroCare in Tanzania. He points out the unequal bargaining relationship between foreign-owned agrofuel companies like Diligent, Sun Biofuels and Procon and small-scale farmers.
And now the Sun Biofuel from UK have purchased 9,000 hectares of land, of which they are going to compensate an equivalence of $200 per farmer. For us, we see that that's a very little amount. Though for a poor farmer who has never touched $200, to him or her seems to be a lot of money. But $200 is nothing because it will not going to take out that farmer from poverty.
Mkindi says the Tanzanian government seems to be fast-tracking biofuels initiatives and handing over vast tracts of land to foreign large-scale investors who are farming agrofuel crops like sugarcane, palm oil and jatropha. Mkindi says in Tanzania the most fertile lands with the best access to water are being targeted, even though these lands are already being used for food production by local farmers. He foresees competition and conflicts over resources.
We have seen conflict over water use. There are farmers who have been evicted in a place called Usangu Basin. That basin has been given to an investor. There were, I could say, approximately 1,000 farmers who were working, who were practicing small-scale rice farming. They were evicted and given to an investor. So we find that now the investor has diverted all the water into his farm. So farmers, they don't have water to irrigate their crops.
Mkindi adds that agrofuel crops grown in Tanzania should be used to solve his country's energy problems. They shouldn't just be exported to the global north. In neighbouring Kenya, there are high hopes for the agrofuel crop jatropha. Although native to America, jatropha is a non-edible crop that grows in Asia, India and Africa. It's a small shrub that can be domesticated to make a plantation crop, and these seeds can be harvested to make crude oil. Lorna Omodo is the program director from the Vanilla Development Foundation in Kenya. She says jatropha is a huge opportunity for Kenya.
We have seen that within Eastern province alone, 6 million Kenyans might benefit, 6 million Kenyan families. And the Kenyan families consists of about 5 on an average. And another 6 million in the whole value chain, because there is a value chain, there is machinery, there is sorting. It is a whole chain. It is a whole industry.
But with the scramble to find an oil substitute, not everyone is convinced that agrofuels are the so-called silver bullet needed to tackle climate change. Many NGOs see it as further exploitation of the global south by the global north. Philip McMichael is a professor of development sociology at Cornell University in upstate New York.
Countries in the global south, because of the debt crisis, are still paying off huge amounts of debt, and it's in their interest, as their governments will tell their populations, to export resources in order to help earn foreign exchange to defray that debt. So this is a vicious cycle that we're in, and somehow we need to break that cycle in order to move towards energy sufficiency at national and regional levels.
McMichael says agrofuels could be a part of the climate change solution, but only if we also change our concept of development and move away from patterns of mass consumption. Many NGOs are calling for a moratorium on agrofuels until adequate assessments of their environmental and social costs and their efficiency in reducing greenhouse gases are made. Cinnamon Nippard, Free Speech Radio News, Berlin.
And thanks once again to Free Speech Radio News for that additional piece. Scientists say they've found out what fuels the aurora borealis, which is also known as the Northern Lights. It's caused by something called a geomagnetic storm. It's charged particles that flow from the sun. They connect with the Earth's atmosphere through wound-up bundles of a magnetic field. In March, satellites from NASA's Themis mission detected a two-hour show of the Northern Lights over Alaska and parts of northern Canada. The satellites measured particle flow and magnetic fields. The main investigator of the project, UCLA's Vasilis Angelopoulos, says the storm powering the aurora borealis raced 400 miles a minute across the sky. He says the storm's power was close to the energy of a 5.5 magnitude earthquake. Scientists have theorized on the energy source that creates the northern lights, but their theories are now confirmed. Scientists hope the Themis satellites will record another geometric storm next year to learn more about when the storms are triggered. All right, it's time now for another break here on News 101, but stay tuned for commentary and much more coming up on the other side.
CITR podcast update number 5.
Work has begun on Canada's information highway. That's the state-of-the-art network that we're told will change everything from the way we do business to the way we learn. As it comes more and more into our personal lives, how are we going to cope with the techno-peasants? I mean, this world, which was a fantasy for me 10 years ago, every 6 months becomes more a part of my own real life. You know, in the place where I do most of my writing, I now am just hooked into the world electronically, right, or yeah. Would be if I could figure out how to make the bleep bleep modem work. But I'm technologically over my head already. The limit on me is not what you can do, it's what I can do.
I'm not sure you want to use your bleep bleep modem, or any modem for that matter, with receiving podcasts. But, just check out our website and I'm sure you'll figure it out.
For more information, visit citr.ca/podcast. Thank you for listening and please be kind to robots.
Stressed? Anxious? Lost? AMS Speakeasy Peer Support is here to help. We offer free and confidential support to all members of the UBC community. Located at the north entrance of the sub, we offer drop-in peer support, information, in-person and email referrals, and operate an after-hours crisis line. Call 604-822-3700 for support, or check out ams.ubc.ca/speakeasy for further information.
Another night's work well done. And so easy without that nuisance Spider-Man.
I didn't know you cared.
You!
Yes, Electro, and I'm going to short-circuit you once and for all.
You would have been better off in the hands of the police. You are no match for my power.
It takes more than power to win. It takes brains and knowing your enemy.
I'll pit my power against your brains any day. What was that?
That, my thieving fiend, is the result of brains.
Use your brain. Turn off all the lights when you leave a room. If every household in BC turned off one light bulb for 4 hours a day for 1 year, it would save enough electricity to power all the homes in Mission for an entire year. This Power Smart play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
Welcome back to News 101. The current time is 5:37.
Some breaking news this afternoon from the Vancouver International Airport. A Cathay Pacific Airbus A340 has made a successful emergency landing. It was en route to Hong Kong with 290 people on board, but it started to experience some wing flap problems, and they decided to make the emergency landing at the airport. They circled around and dumped some fuel over the Pacific Ocean before making the landing. There are no word on any injuries, and it appears as if the landing was a safe procedure. All right, our producer Megan Turcato is here now with a look at our oddity of the week. And this week you'll be talking with us about tow truck drivers in Oregon, Megan.
Yes, Jeff. Don't mess with tow truck drivers. This after an Oregon tow truck driver who was upset over a recent ticket attempted to take revenge on the police by towing a police cruiser. Police say that the 32-year-old man was arrested after he hooked his truck to the marked police vehicle. The officer who the vehicle belonged to was preoccupied responding to a domestic disturbance call. The truck driver released the cruiser when a police officer ordered him to. However, police reported that he later locked the door of his tow truck and refused to cooperate. Instead, the man called the police station as he apparently was unsatisfied with the response that he got when he attempted to tow the police cruiser. The manager of the tow truck company was then summoned and was eventually able to coax the driver into surrendering and leaving his position holed up in the cab of his tow truck. This brand of vigilante justice is not recommended, as the truck driver was charged with unlawful use of a vehicle, obstructing governmental administration, interfering with a peace officer, and criminal mischief. Any thoughts?
Taking revenge by towing a police cruiser, probably not the best idea he could have come up with.
It sounds to me like a very typical small town scenario. To me, having grown up in a small town, I've seen similar sort of situations where a man with a big truck thinks that he can sort of override the law, and maybe he was drunk, I don't know, and tries to make an impact in the judicial system or something.
I'd like to think alcohol was probably involved
in some way, right?
The thing with the small town, the other problem is, you try and do something like this, you probably won't get away with it for very long.
Right.
Everybody knows we'll travel fairly quickly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right. That was Harry over at 1067 Main Street.
There you go.
Or whatever.
I'd also like to know how the call to the police station went down, because he then called in himself, I guess, to the police station and said, what did he say? I've towed your truck. And then I stopped, and now I'm holed up in my truck.
Right.
How did that go down?
Well, you know, one of the compliments I would have to this tow truck driver is that I have heard people, complaining about problems that they've had with police officers, mm-hmm. or, unfair tickets, unfair whatever. And this guy actually really wanted to do something about it, and so he decided to make a statement, I guess.
Quite the statement it was, and
yes.
Now he'll probably have to make a statement in court.
He will do.
Unfortunately,
nice way to wrap that one up. Okay, so it's time for another break, but coming up next, we will have the Arts Report with Katie Fitzpatrick. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Sunday, December 2nd, tune in to CITR 101.9 FM for a 12-hour marathon of The Rocker Show. Not only is it George Barrett's birthday, but he is celebrating 25 years on CITR Radio. Tune in for some special guests and some great tunes. The Rocker Show, 25-year anniversary special. Sunday, December 2nd.
We're from the UBC Food Society.
Yummy!
And we're the only food club at UBC.
We're about feeding students, but also teaching them how to feed themselves. Through our restaurant outings and cooking workshops, we hope to expose you guys to the diversity of cultures, flavors, and food communities Vancouver has to offer.
So if you want to get involved, email us at foodsociety@gmail.com or check up on our website at www.ams.ubc.ca/clubs/foodsociety, or you can even join our Facebook group.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, daily grassroots global unembedded international independent news hour, and this is CITR 101.9 FM.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR. I'm Rita Farkas alongside Jeff Sargent, coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Right now it is 5:43 and time to turn things over to Katie Fitzpatrick for a look at the arts.
Hello and welcome to your 5-minute art speech here on News 101. I'm your host, Katie Fitzpatrick. Now, this week I was trying to check out some different comedy events to let you all know what's worth checking out in the comedy scene in Vancouver, but unfortunately I fell into a couple snags, which I'm actually going to let you know about. Listed on the georgiastraight.com website is the fact that they have comedy at Chavana on Tuesday nights, and apparently they don't. They only have it on Monday night. So I'm going to be checking that out on Monday night, and you can hear my review of that Urban Improv Showcase on Tuesday's Arts Express at 2 o'clock with myself. And I also went to check out the Comedy Night at the Rhyme on Commercial Drive, a really great restaurant and venue and everything, but apparently they're closed down for renovations for the next little while. So if you plan to check out anything there, know that they are also closed. One thing that I did actually get a chance to check out this week was the new film Margot at the Wedding, which stars Nicole Kidman as well as Jack Black, and also a woman named Jennifer Jason Leigh, who I swear I recognize from somewhere, but I can't quite place it. It's a movie that has sort of the indie vibe to it, despite featuring a lot of big stars, like obviously Nicole Kidman and Jack Black. And I have to say that it was really an interesting film, and both actors, really pulled off their parts, despite sort of being quite big for this small film. And Jack Black, actually, he was funny for sure. He brought that to the table, absolutely, but he also managed to be serious and to help move the plot along, which I was really impressed by. I'll give you a little synopsis of this film. It's about a woman named Margot Zeeler, who's played by Nicole Kidman. She's a savagely bright, razor-tongued short story writer who creates chaos wherever she goes. She sets off on a surprise journey to the wedding of her estranged and free-spirited, unassuming sister, Pauline, who's played by Jennifer Jason Leigh. Margot, with her all-too-rapidly maturing son, Claude, in tow, who's pretty funny as well, arrives with the gale force of a hurricane. From the minute she meets Pauline's fiancé, the unemployed artist Malcolm, played by Jack Black, Margot starts to plant seeds of doubt about the union. As the wedding approaches, one complication crashes into the next: vengeful neighbors, a beloved tree in the backyard, and Margot's own marital turmoil. The two sisters find themselves at the precipice of an unexpected transformation, ultimately revealing that even when your family is about to implode, the one thing you can cling to for solace and comfort is your imploding family. Now, I went and saw this with my sister, actually, so it was interesting with the sister relationships going on in this film. And we both agreed that it was both funny because it was supposed to be a black comedy and there were a lot of funny parts, but it was also very interesting and it gave you a lot to think about because the main character, Margot, who's played by Nicole Kidman, is not a character you can really sympathize with at all. And that's very interesting because usually, protagonists are meant to be sympathized with, even if they're murderers or something, that, you know, they're supposed to reveal us a bit of humanity. And with Margot, it was just very hard to sympathize with her. And it really put you in interesting places to understanding where she was coming from. And she's really obsessed with diagnosing other characters in the movie. And in the end, she's sort of diagnosed by someone else, and that hits her really hard as she tries to come to terms with who she really is. And as you kind of watch it, it makes you wonder how she's so out of sync with who she really is, and it just makes you think about how you might behave sometimes without even realizing that you're behaving a certain way. Now, if you want to check that out, it's currently showing at Fifth Avenue Theaters. This is its first week, and it's also its final week, so you're going to want to check it out soon. Another movie showing is I'm Not There, the Bob Dylan biopic. There's also an interesting one called Milarepa, Magician, Murderer, and Saint, and that's about a Tibetan monk, and it's also made by a Tibetan director, so that should be interesting. There's also Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, No Country for Old Men, which is also getting good reviews, and they're Darjeeling Limited, which came out a while ago, but it's still showing there at Fifth Avenue Theater. Some other listings for this week. In theater, there's an interesting one. Debbie Does Dallas the Musical. Pickled Productions present Erica Schmidt's satirical musical version of the 1970s porn flick directed by Randy Parliament. That is at the Odyssey Nightclub at 1251 Howe, and it is showing tomorrow night at 7 p.m. And it actually was at another venue previously. I guess it's moved over. Another one on right now is My Fair Lady at the Gateway Theater in Richmond, and that's showing till December 31st. And there's also reservations for four. Peg Leg Jack Productions Co-op presents Michael P. Northey's comedy about dating. That's till December 16th, so only a couple days left, and that's at the Havana 1212 Commercial. In dance, there's Strathé Variations No. 80, 80 Years to Celebrate, a tribute to dancer, choreographer, and teacher Grant Strathé's 80th birthday, featuring video clips of his work and performances by Arts Umbrella Dance Company, Peter Bingham, and Wen Wei Wang, Go Ballet, and Mescali Dance. That is December 15th, tomorrow night at 6 p.m. at the Scotiabank Dance Center on Davie. In music, there's the UBC Opera Ensemble and West Coast Symphony performing music by Johann Strauss. That performance is called Die Fledermaus, and that's showing at the Chan Center for the Performing Arts here at UBC, the 13th to 15th at 8 p.m. and the 16th at 3 p.m. In literary events, there's something called Crick Crack. The Vancouver Society of Storytellers presents an evening of sounds and stories by Tony Rainbow, Kira Van Dusen, Philomena Jordan, Helen May, and Mary Bruner, plus an open mic. So if you're interested in writing and reading, that may be something you want to check out. It's at Trinity St. Mark's Church at 1805 Larch, and it's Sunday night from 7:30 to 9:30. A few interesting things going on in galleries. One is Afua Granger, paintings exploring skin, transience, and beauty. That's at Aurum Argentum at Railspur Alley there on Granville Island, and that's showing till January 30th. Another one is Urban Impressions, photo impressionist works by David Moon. That's at the Amelia Douglas Gallery at Douglas College out in New West, and it's till December 15th, so you just have until tomorrow to check that one out. Another interesting one is Bite Size, original and eclectic collection of smaller works priced under $12,000. Still a bit expensive for me, but maybe not for yourself. That's at the Elliott Lewis Gallery on West 2nd till December 23rd. Finally, in galleries, there's Some Days It Seems Nothing Much Has Changed, works by Sarah Hodgkins till December 15th, also tomorrow, and that's at the Republic Gallery at 732 Richards. So if you want to hear the full review of Margot at the Wedding, as well as my review of the Urban Improv bit, and we're going to also be doing a live interview from France with a performer and choreographer from Vancouver's Dance Center, who's currently out in France doing some dance work, you're going to want to tune into Arts Express, which is on Tuesday the 18th at 2 o'clock. That's with myself, and that'll be the last showing over the holidays with Arts Express taking a break on the 25th and the 1st. But you can also tune in, of course, here to News 101 to get your arts beat during that time. Once again, I'm Katie Fitzpatrick here on CITR 101.9.
And thank you, Katie. Before we go tonight, we'll check in with meteorologist Selena Ferris for a look at your weekend weather forecast. Selena.
There is a big low-pressure system overhead and another one on its heels, which means there is no end in rain for the next few days. Saturday and Sunday will be periods of rain with highs of 6 degrees and 8 degrees, with a low down to 4 Saturday night. Rain will continue in the next few days with similar temperatures Monday and Tuesday. That's your weekend weather, brought to you by the Storm Club at UBC. For more information, you can email us at stormubc@gmail.com.
All right, thank you very much, Selena. That is our program for today, December 14th, 2007. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. And if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334. You can always email news@citr.ca.
Megan Turcato produced this radio program. For more news, join us Monday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, I'm Rita Farkas.
And I'm Jeff Sargent. Thank you very much for listening. Coming up next, it is CITR Sports Friday, and tonight we're going to feature some BC High School boys basketball action live from the North Shore. Wilson Wong and Howard Sumura will be live on the air with the call. That's coming up next. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.